Support for this episode of the podcast comes from our patrons at Patreon. Go to patreon.com/chasingearhart to join the chase and become a patron today. On the morning of July 2nd, 1937, Amelia Earhart and her navigator Fred Noonan disappeared over the Pacific Ocean without a trace. 81 years later, all over the world lie scattered pieces of their puzzle, waiting to be put together. Welcome to Season 2 of the Chasing Earhart Podcast.
This is a story about a glamorous heroine and her baffling disappearance. Amelia Earhart was beautiful and much beloved by the American public as the world's finest female aviator of the 1930s. Amelia set many airborne milestones, and as the first woman to fly solo and non-stop across the Atlantic, she received the Distinguished Flying Cross from the U.S. Congress, the Cross of Knight of the Legion of Honor from the French government, and the Gold Medal of the National Geographic Society, which was presented to her by U.S. President Herbert Hoover. Yet even today, Amelia is still newsworthy, thanks to her mysterious disappearance on July the 2nd, 1937. Earhart was attempting to become the first woman to fly around the world. She and her navigator, Fred Noonan, had covered about 22,000 miles of the journey. The remaining 7,000 miles involved island hopping across the vast Pacific Ocean. Just 3 weeks before her 40th birthday, on July the 2nd, 1937, at midnight, Earhart and Noonan took off from Ley with enough fuel for 21 hours of flying. Their intended destination was Howland Island. They never arrived and disappeared without trace.
With me now, joining us via Zoom from Maryland, is author Mona Kirby. She wrote a really fantastic book called Amelia Earhart, Courage in the Sky. It's one of the most popular books here in Atchison, Kansas, and on Amazon.com. It was recently reissued and can be purchased, and we'll have the links to that in the show. But first things first, Mona, thank you so much for joining us and sitting in on the podcast today.
You're so welcome, Chris. It's nice to be here, and I look forward to our conversation.
Well, I'm happy to have you. And what I'd like to do is if you can, just for those who may not be familiar with your work, can you start off by telling a little bit about your education, your professional background, please?
I've taught school forever. I started off as a kindergarten teacher. Then I became an elementary school librarian in Texas. And then I moved to Maryland, where I've been a professor for the last 20 years. So mostly I teach graduate students who are going to be school librarians. So my entire career has been focused around students. So I have 4 degrees, and I started getting interested in writing for children back when I was an elementary school librarian.
And do you know, I guess it's an interesting question to ask, because I like to ask it of a lot of our guests, but do you know what your, I guess to start this conversation off, do you know what your earliest recollections are of Amelia Earhart? Do you have anything that sticks out in your memory?
Oh, that is a terrific question. I think that the year I started thinking, looking around for a new project to write about, that there was something in the summer Fort Worth Star-Telegram newspaper. Ever since Amelia disappeared, every so often there's a brand new story about what might have happened to her. So I think that newspaper article, and I'm not certain what year it was, might have spurred my interest in learning about her. I probably knew her as a child, but I think there was some article about they thought they found a piece of the plane on Howland Island and they were going to investigate it.
Okay, so let's get into the book a little bit, because it's a really great read, and we're going to have the link to the book in the show notes for folks to go out and pick it up. But it's called Amelia Earhart, Courage in the Sky, and I wanted to ask you how this particular project came to your desk and how you got involved in it.
I was Viking Press in New York at that time, where they were making they had a series of biographies of famous women. So that, of course, interested me. And the first biography I did for them was on Beverly Seals, a famous American opera singer. Well, that book did not last very long in print. And so when I was looking around for a second topic, I spend a lot of time with that person, that famous figure, reading the books and the research, and all that time I just hated for it to go to waste and have the book go out of print. So I thought, well, when I read the story about Amelia Earhart, they're still trying to figure out what might have happened, why did she disappear, that I thought, aha, let's do a book on Amelia Earhart. And that's that.
So there are, as you and I both know, there are so many books out there on Amelia Earhart and the disappearance case and her life and even a couple of autobiographies from Amelia herself.
Yes.
But what I want to find out from you is, when you approach a book and you're writing it as a children's author and you have a specific targeted audience in mind, does that change the way you research the book, and does that change your approach and how you actually write the book and actually put it together?
That's a great question. And since I've never written an adult biography, I can't do that comparison. But there are things that I think about when I'm writing it for the child. One of the first things I want to do is make certain that the young reader can relate to that Amelia Earhart as a young girl. So that I pay attention to. The second thing I pay attention to is I like to get multiple sources to try and double check. I kind of like to have three sources saying the very same thing. We're not exactly sure when she was born, so I just went with a source that where there were two sources that said the same year. Another thing that I try to pay attention to is that this particular book, at that time, they were not including source notes in biographies for children, but I still wanted everything to be accurate. So everything that appears in quotation marks is directly quoted from those original sources. I used some of Amelia's own books, so nothing is made up dialogue. I don't do fictionalized biographies. This book was as clear as I can make it. One of the fun things about working with a major publisher is that the editor will check, to see that I've said it as correctly as possible, but then it goes through multiple additional editors' hands, such as a content specialist and then a line editor for punctuation, grammar, capitalization, and things like that. So one of the questions we got from the content specialist, they just wanted to verify the material of one of those early planes that she used. Was it truly fabric or was it metal? What exactly was it? So every note that I took, I just went back to check my source notes, told my editor where I found it, what page, and then they were good to go.
And, one of my favorite things about this book is it starts out with a quote from Courage, and it's not from Courage and Sky, but it's from Amelia Earhart. And the quote is very straightforward. It's, "I know what I want to do and I expect to do it." And I love that quote. That's one of my favorite quotes that Amelia ever said. And I wonder if you can sort of talk about that quote in particular and just kind of why you decided to stick that particular quote in there and what that means to you personally. Just kind of speculate on that a little bit.
That observation you just made, I think, is probably, that's a really rich question, and I think that's worth pondering for everybody in their entire life. I know what I want to do, and I expect to do it. Why it resonates with me is when Amelia Earhart was a girl, it was preferable to be a boy. Boys got to do things without being hampered by a frilly dress and a frilly petticoat. Boys got to go off to go to college. Boys got to choose a career that they wanted, any career that they wanted. Girls couldn't play rough and tumble things. So even as a little girl, Amelia Earhart, she pressed against those roadblocks and continued on. So that was something to be admired. And the other thing that always interested me in Amelia Earhart, as brave as she was and as willing to fight against the stereotypes that hindered women's opportunities at that time, so she was in some ways foolish, because on that last trip, she was so worried about overloading the plane and making it too heavy, she didn't carry extra gas. Although she had the gas can, she dumped some. She didn't use, she took off the radio antenna, which could have increased her chances of being heard. She chose not to learn the Morse code, which was the most effective way of communicating. You know, she forgot to turn on the switch on her dashboard so that she could communicate with the men waiting for on Howlin Island. So sometimes I think it's always a balance in a person's life, the being courageous and not being foolhardy.
Yeah, that's a great observation. And I think what I get out of that quote specifically is one word, and that's the word expect. Because at that point, you know, as you so eloquently stated, it was, you know, women weren't really, you know, thought of to do the things that she ended up doing. So it was, you know, one of those things where you could rearrange that quote to say, I know what I want to do and I should be able to do it, or I'd really like to do it. But she said, I expect to do it, which is really, I think, a powerful line in a time that women, you know, really weren't doing a lot of things that men were doing. And so I think it's a really powerful quote.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I agree.
Yeah. So, and one of the things I want to move on to a little bit here is in the very beginning of the book, you start out with a very famous incident that actually took place about three blocks away from where I'm sitting right now.
Oh.
And it's the roller coaster incident. And we've talked about this roller coaster incident with a couple of different authors throughout the podcast so far. And I wanted to sort of get your observations on it, because it's just a really neat incident. It really is. It's one of those things where I think it sort of has the makings of kind of what she would become later on in life. And, you know, as daring as she was and as headstrong as she was. Can you talk a little bit about why you chose to kind of start the book out with that particular incident and what your personal observations are on that roller coaster incident?
I may have started it off because of some previous research, but it just seems the absolutely perfect beginning for a girl who was not going to say no for anything that was about to happen in her life. So she and her sister, in spite of being girls and expected to be dainty, they rig up this roller coaster on the side of the roof so they can slide down over and over. And instead of being scared or worried about getting a bumped elbow or a bruised knee, they just did that over and over again, and they felt like they were flying each time. And that's why it has to open up with the book, because she was quoted as telling her sister, oh, it feels just like flying. So it has to be the opening of the book. It just has to be.
Yeah, I agree. And I wanted to ask a little bit about the art in the book, because you have an artist working with you on the book. And just as a writer, writing for children, I wanted to ask if you could talk about how important art is in a book like this, because it's, you have a lot of words in the book describing certain instances in Amelia's life and certain activities that she did and certain sort of moments that were kind of standout in her life. But the art, I would imagine, would be very important as far as helping you portray that to kids.
The art is an interesting aspect of publishing for children. When you're the writer and the editor sends the contract, all I'm responsible for is the words. It's the editor's decision in New York City to determine who's going to be the illustrator and how those illustration, where they fit. So I would have loved to have been part of that conversation, but that wasn't my piece of the responsibility. It was between the editor and the illustrator. So I'm looking through the book right now, and I'm perfectly happy with what they selected. I thought they Eileen Keating did the illustrations, and I would have loved to have heard, what are we going to choose? But to me, they did a great job. I liked the balance when they decided to put illustrations and on what pages, and she just did a great job.
Yeah, definitely. Eileen did a great job on the art, and I think it really complements the words. The book itself is a really good read, and I would encourage everybody to go out there and pick it up. Now, what I wanted to ask you about is sort of move the conversation a little bit into impact and legacy, because I know that you and I were talking before this conversation started, and we're talking about Amelia's impact on kids. And if Chasing Earhart is about anything, really, it's about impact and legacy. And especially when it comes to children, I can't tell you how many kids that come up to our team, you know, dressed up as Amelia Earhart when we're out doing shoots and things. And it's really sort of incredible that a woman that disappeared under mysterious circumstances would still kind of warrant this kind of attention from children. And I wonder if you can sort of speculate on that and give your opinion on why you think she still has such a strong hold on kids these days.
Chris, that's a great question too, that's worthy of a lot of thought. So I don't know if I rattle off something right at the beginning, but every time there's a new article about, was she sighted in such and such place, or did they find the heel of her shoe, or did they find a piece of her plane? Perhaps part of her, why we still think about her, is for that terrible reason. She was lost and disappeared. So that keeps the story alive. So I guess that's sad to say, that was a wonderful legacy for the story of Amelia Earhart, even though she lost her life. So that's important. But I also think it resonates with anybody who's ever been told no, they can't do something, and maybe have been frustrated with that answer. So there's a little girl who really pushed her boundaries, and whether or not she was sometimes courageous or sometimes foolhardy, I think at the end of the day, the courageousness is what we focus on, because she gives her life story kind of gives a reader the sight. Well, maybe I could try something.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, what's interesting to me, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this too, is, you know, a lot of people believe that the mystery of the disappearance and her legacy are sort of kind of forever intertwined. And I always respectfully disagree with that. I think that her legacy can, if you take away the disappearance, her legacy stands on its own. I really believe that. But
yeah,
we would be hard pressed to not discuss, you know, the disappearance. I think from, you know, we won't get into great detail about it, but what I wanted to ask you is that a fair statement to say that, you know, if you separate the disappearance and everything that's happened in the last 80, going on 81 years now, from her legacy, does her legacy actually stand on its own?
I would say yes. And that there's going to be a pause and maybe a but. One thing that increased her worldwide legacy was the fact that she was married to Putnam, owner of the publishing company, and he was so incredibly adept at getting out that news and publicizing Amelia. So her legacy deserves mention of the publicity he created for her, because there are other women who made first significant contributions to aviation, but they didn't have that foundation behind them to get out their story. So hats off to Mr. Putnam. Hats off to a brave woman who was determined to what she wanted to do. And then you're correct, I would say the disappearance might be third.
Now, where can people, Mona, find you online? Where can they, do you have a website online, and where can they pick up Amelia Earhart, Courage in the Sky?
Thanks for asking that. Yes, monakirby.com, and Kirby is spelled K-E-R B-Y, but I think I've got it misspelled too on the internet in case somebody spells it differently, so that you can still get that. And then the book is available from multiple spots, starting at Amazon and also Penguin.
Well, this has been an absolute pleasure. It's been something I've been looking forward to for a while. Mona, thank you so much for sitting in on the podcast today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. I enjoyed it. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, part of our Legacy Retrospective series. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Come back to ChasingEarhart.com each week for another new podcast. While at ChasingEarhart.com, visit our archives and our blog to hear all of our past episodes and interviews with guests such as Brad Meltzer, Tom Vinson, Candace Fleming, Jessica Cox, Abigail Harrison, and Shasta Ways. You can also hear interviews with representatives of all of the relevant hypotheses regarding the disappearance of Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan, such as Tom King, Dick Spink, Gary LaPook, Rick Gillespie, Andy Sherrill, and more. Also at our site, you can find hundreds more posts, project updates, and much more information regarding the life and disappearance of Amelia Earhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a show without any sponsors or ads. We rely on support from listeners like you to keep the Chasing Earhart project operating. You can donate to the show, and as our thank you, receive bonus podcasts, merchandise, and advanced opportunities for Chasing Earhart events. Find a full list of available shows and rewards at patreon.com/chasingearhart. You can also follow the project on social media, where our team posts all of our shows, news, and project information. And that hashtag is @ChasingEarhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by Tom Myers. Podcast music is provided by Dane Jarrus Schmidt, and narration is done by Forrest Burgess. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. Chris Evan Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All movie clips and audio used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of historical education, and no infringement is intended. The Chasing Earhart podcast is an exclusive trademark of Chris Evan Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a Chris Evan Films production. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.